Hello, and welcome to Our Dad's Died with me, Tom.
I thought you were going to say Gherkin. Rich, as well, Spaulding.
I thought you were going to say Gherkin. This is a podcast about our dead dads. I have one, Rich has one, and today on the episode we're talking about not necessarily our dead dads, but the dead dads of popular culture.
Yeah, we've each chosen a good example and a bad example in films, movies, TV
and
shows,
books.
That kind of thing. And books. I've split films and movies into two separate things there, which was interesting. But they both count. And we've got good and bad examples of dead dads in popular culture. If you have got any that you want to contribute, listen through to this. Send us an email, ourdadsdiedpod@gmail.com. Tell us about your dead dads in popular culture.
Send us a message on Instagram @ourdadsdied or Twitter @ourdadsdied as well. Yeah, just tell us the best and worst dead dads, dead parents you can think of, or just deaths you can think of.
Yeah, grief.
The best and worst grief in media. We're fascinated by it, and we're going to make this a running thing if things, if people like this. So, here we go!
Smooth as ever.
Rich, I have a theory about television programs. My theory is the longer a television program goes on, the greater the chance there is of a parent dying.
I mean, that is also true of life. The longer anything goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the punchline written down.
Oh, so sorry, is that what
move on from that? No. It's you know, is it a good way of shaking up a story? Is it to do with writers running out of ideas? Is it just inevitable? I don't know. But what I know is parental deaths in television seem to be things that are drawn on quite late on. Like, it's not necessarily a thing that happens at the start. It's much more like something that happens near the end. You know, Modern Family, for example. It's like, we're all ticking along, everything's fine. Then it's like, all right, here's the episode where Phil's mum dies. And it's like, ha, here's the episode where Phil's dad dies. Gotcha. You know, it just feels like the writers are sitting in a room and they go, all right, guys, how are we going to end this series?
We need a big finish. What's a bigger finish than death?
Right, exactly.
It is the ultimate big finish. Yeah, I think either it is the premise of something, or it is something that happens when you've sort of not got that many ideas left.
It just becomes a bit of a well to go to. I haven't watched much Big Bang Theory beyond the start, but I, even without any knowledge of whether this happens or not, I would bet good money that one of the main characters has a parental death, series 5 on. Maybe multiple characters.
Yeah, I mean, I also haven't watched it, so you're probably right.
Well, I'll come back to this in the edit, and I'll say, we'll find out whether I'm talking right or not. But I bet I am.
Do you want to try and guess which character it is? Just and then in the edit, we'll see who's right.
Howard, because his mum's off camera. Hello, Tom here. Recording this in the edit, mere moments before the podcast gets broadcast, just to let you know, big spoiler. Howard's mum definitely does die in later series of Big Bang Theory. So, you know, I'm a genius.
Oh, yeah. Good shout. I would have gone with the main guy whose name I don't know.
Sheldon.
No, not him. The other one?
The main guy?
The one with the glasses.
Oh, yeah. Sheldon.
Bert?
Bert. Thanks, Bert.
Yeah, it's Bert. I think Bert's dad dies.
I think the characters are Sheldon, Bert, Raj, Penelope,
and Ernie.
And, yeah, of course, Ernie's in the mix, of course, as we know.
Yeah. And R2-D2.
Sesame Street has a pretty good dad death in it.
In Sesame Street?
Yeah. So this is the this is what we're doing this week, by the way, guys. We're talking about dead parents in television, film, other forms of media. Pick your best. But since we're here anyway, I was going to talk about Sesame Street. So it's funny that you mentioned Bert and Ernie. Mr. Hooper. So he's one of the regular characters on Sesame Street. A person, not a Muppet. By the way, I'm a massive nerd, obsessed with the Muppets, if you don't know, dear listener. I remember this episode when I was a kid. Obviously, it aired in like the 70s or the 80s or something like that. But when I was a kid, I remember watching it and being quite upset by it. Basically, this guy, is just one of the actors on Sesame Street. He's just one of the guys who's in the neighborhood, occasionally has some dialogue. In real life, he dies. IRL.
Oh, shit.
So they're thinking, okay, what are we going to do here? And instead of you know, skirting over it, or it's a kid's show, so you might go, well, you know, you went to the... For some reason, yeah. I was going to say you went to a North Pole. I don't know.
What you tell kids.
It's what you tell kids, isn't it? He went to live with Santa.
Yeah, Grandma's gone to live with Santa.
That's where Santa's come from. That's where you get Santa.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead of saying that, they said he's gone away. He's gone. He's never coming back. And Big Bird goes full sad and is asking, if you've watched Sesame Street as an adult, you know, just for leisure, because you have younger siblings, presumably, and you show them the show, what you notice is Big Bird is kind of like the kid, right? Big Bird is...
Right.
Big Bird talks through the eyes of the audience. He asks really like dumb questions and doesn't know anything. So Big Bird is asking, like, where's Mr. Hooper gone, and trying to get to the bottom of it, and they're just gently explaining, well, he's gone away. He's not going to be able to come back. And Big Bird's like, why? And they're getting into a... Remember, this is a kid show. You know, this is before school telly. And they've got adults talking to Big Bird, a Muppet, but still, and explaining gently... Well, sometimes this happens, and then you never get to see them again. And Big Bird's like, this makes me sad. And they're like, well, it makes us sad too. I don't know. I just think that's such a genuine move. But what's so ballsy about it is that they did it all on this kid's show. I think of plenty of adult shows where they would struggle to get this level of compassion in something scripted. I think if you watch the clip on YouTube, I don't know why... It has a kind of improvisational feel. It feels like a real conversation, which is, I think, the aim whenever a father figure dies.
And is he a father figure in the... I don't remember Mr. Hooper. My memory is obviously the bright, colourful puppets rather than a guy who was there as well. But presumably he lived on Sesame Street.
Yeah, he's one of the adults who lived on Sesame Street and would dispense advice. Which is the role, if you sort of between the skits, you would have moments of Sesame Street itself with Big Bird and the gang.
Was he in a gang? I didn't realise that. He's on his corner.
With Groucho.
Bert and Ernie are on their corner.
Groucho?
They don't mix.
Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah, Groucho Marx. He's there as well.
Yeah, it's
Mr.
All
Hooper.
The classics. Hooper Marx, Harpo.
I do want to dig down a little bit further into... Do you remember watching this when you were a kid?
Yeah, I remember watching this as a kid. So I remember, being off school a day sick. I think they did show it before school when we were really young, but I think the more common way you would have watched it is if you were off sick. And then, like, Channel 4 would put it on during the day before midday. Right. But I remember watching it and being, like, quite unwell and lying on the sofa sort of under a blanket, and I must have been... 5 or 6 years old, really young. And feeling really sad. It's like one of my early kind of sad memories. And, you know...
For a lot of people, that would have been maybe your first introduction to death. Because if you're the age that you watch Sesame Street at, like, 6, 7, 5, whatever, probably haven't had a... Well... Most people probably haven't had a big death in their lives by that point. And so the first time you're introduced to the concept that you see it and you go, and you're obviously sad that Mr. Hooper's going to die, but I imagine it becomes apparent during the show that essentially, well, as we say, death comes for us all.
Big Bird actually looks directly down the camera, down the barrel, and says, but you, on your sofa.
With his big felt eyes.
It comes for you first. Single tear rolls down his cheek. yeah, that's actually stolen from Big Bird. Classic Muppets moments. They would have loved it. They stole loads of stuff. They'd be happy with that.
But did it stick with you when you were a kid?
I don't think it did, but it definitely Well, it didn't knowingly, but it definitely was there.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so interesting is I have this difficult emotional relationship with life now following my dad dying. But I still maintain a really negative emotional relationship with television. Like, I can just cry at anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it was just ingrained in me really young from watching that you that crying when watching TV is cool. And you know, I just go back to those days as a 6-year-old on the sofa, sick off school.
But I guess Sesame Street taught you that it's okay to cry.
Well, it did.
When somebody
dies.
That's
the thing. I mean, how brave for a kids' TV show to do that? You know.
Yeah.
What a classic show. So I just feel like for me, if we're talking about good examples of death on television, brackets general, you know, Big Bird. Probably the canon of the Muppets has Big Bird with parents somewhere. But I think Sesame Street to a kid who's just watching on the fly, as we say, I think to them, there's no obvious parental figure here. The parental figures are the adults who are there. So if one of them, you know, has to go away and isn't there anymore, I think that's actually quite an early introduction to parental death in television. Of course, I don't think it's my first example. I'm sure I was shown Bambi many times before that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But
and because, I mean, death is an absolute staple of the Disney canon.
It's
you can barely move for a parental death in Disney.
Walt loves it. Couldn't get enough of the parental death. Yeah. He was all about that life.
Yeah,
he really was. Yes, so I think that's, for me, Sesame Street, classic, basics, fundamentals, here's how you do it. If anyone said to me, how are we going to do a death on television, a parental death, I would say, listen, all you need is a big yellow bird. Someone in there, arm up, doing the mouth. Landed.
I mean, it is quite surreal, isn't it? You know, because Big Bird is essentially a 7-foot chicken. And for many people, the way that they learnt compassion and about the fact that at some point all of us will cease to be is because of a huge felt bird.
Yeah.
Also grappling with that concept in front of them
through
on the TV
the eyes
screen
of the audience. Yeah. I'm so here for it. I just think that's I think that's absolutely goddamn brilliant. And for me, much more impactful doing it that way, particularly because I think it has the emotions built within it of someone they worked with and they knew. So I think it is necessarily going to have more emotions in the moment than something The Lion King, where I still think it's a good parental death, but maybe it's a little bit, you know, come on, he's dead.
Move on. And they do move on.
And he moves on pretty quickly. I mean, they don't languish. You know, he walks away sad for a bit, and then it's like, Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata. You know.
Yeah. Someone sings, someone just goes, listen, have you tried not worrying about it? And he's like, oh, yeah, cool.
Which,
and that's what
I do
does.
Sometimes wonder if Hakuna Matata is just the direction I went in. Well, it's just when Timon sort of popped up to me and said, what have you thought about just not doing emotions? Just no worries, full blown the whole way. No worries, but no pleasure.
To be fair, Hakuna Matata would be a very different song if Hakuna Matata meant no emotions.
It means no emotions for the rest of your days. Because they can't.
Yeah, an entirely monotone. It's a problem-free
philosophy.
Hakuna Matata. Let us go and rest in the jungle now.
Is that the dialogue, though? Is that the dialogue? Because that was slightly creepy.
No, but that's all they could think of.
I think they fade out.
It can't be, let's go and play now. Let us go rest in the jungle now.
I think they just fade out. I don't think Timon ever grabs Simba and says, listen, it's playtime. Playtime's beginning.
hello to this new child who stumbled alone into the forest. It's playtime, baby. Oh, I was struggling because, I mean, there are a lot of deaths in sort of kids' films, quite a lot, as we've said, and a lot of the time it is to sort of introduce kids to the idea of death, and parental death is quite a good origin story. I mean, the reason that we started talking about on this episode is we both quite you realise how prevalent parental death is in kids' films, because when you try to watch anything that is fun to take your mind off of death, in the immediate aftermath. So essentially what happened was my dad died 23rd of December. There was a lot going on for 2 days. And then on Christmas Day, I was finally alone with my family and we all sort of sat down and were like, right, let's just watch. There's got to be something on TV at Christmas that's going to take our mind off everything that's happened. And so we popped on ITV and it was a movie called The Croods, animated film, silly comedy starring Nicolas Cage, about a cave family. And you think, there we go, that'll take our mind off it for 2 hours. Turns out it's a 2-hour film about the patriarch of the cave people family. Yeah. Struggling to connect with the rest of his family, feeling like he's losing them, and then ultimately sacrificing himself to save them all. Now, he doesn't, spoiler alert, he doesn't die, but there's a scene where he has to throw his family over a chasm, and he sort of has to say goodbye to them and throw them over this chasm to save them, knowing that he'll be left behind. And... about an hour into the film, we were all sitting there in complete silence watching this happen, and we're just like, "This, how is this a bad choice of film to watch on this day?" It was absolutely, and so it is everywhere. Oh, but weirdly, I've struggled. I wanted to find an example of one that I've watched since my dad died that I've sort of connected with, and so my example doesn't actually involve a death, but it's a bit on the nose in another way. Okay. Have you seen The Father? Starring Anthony Hopkins.
I haven't, although I.
But you know
I,
of it.
No, you know what? I don't know anything about it. However, from the name alone, I know it's something I'm not going to watch. So that's what I will say. I feel like, you know, you're saying it's a bit on the nose, and I'm saying, well, the clue.
Yeah.
Just to what.
Is that it's called.
You know, I mean, at what point do you just have to take... You don't have to go on doesadogdie.com to find out if there's something going on a bit death adjacent in The Father. That feels like it's...
Yeah, painted, yeah.
Especially if the father's played by an old man.
But, spoiler alert, he doesn't die. So that's why it's kind of an odd choice, because at no point during the film does Anthony Hopkins' character, a.k.a. the father, die. He survives. He's still alive at the end. But it's a film about dementia. So he is an old man with dementia and he lives in this flat and he is charming but also unpleasant, has a difficult relationship with his daughter played by Olivia Colman. And the clever thing that they do to sort of portray dementia is that it's always Anthony Hopkins, but at various points a different actor will play the people around him and he won't recognise them. And they'll be like, no, Dad, it's me. But it's not. And so you see, and gradually things disappear from his apartment and he doesn't really know what's going on. And it's a really heartbreaking film. And it sort of ends with him she can't care for him anymore. And his daughter has to sort of send him into a home so that she can go and live her life. And it's really heartbreaking. And it ends with a scene of him in this home and you don't know whether he's being well looked after or badly looked after, and he just completely loses his mind and is like crying for his mother. It's a really haunting film. But he doesn't die.
Oh my god. And it's okay.
The thing that struck me about it was that I don't cry at popular culture and movies and stuff very often, and that one at the end I didn't cry, And I was watching it with my partner and she cried. And then I like went to the kitchen to do the washing up. And suddenly, it was probably 15 minutes after the film ended, just had this like wave of grief and just properly sobbed for quite a while. And I was trying to work out why. And it sounds weird because the experience in the film of this woman caring for her father with dementia is absolutely horrendous and awful.
Nothing like your experience at all.
No, but I had this weird thought of like, oh, I'll never get to do that for my dad. And it would be awful. It would be awful to watch your father go through that. But at the same time, I was like, oh, I felt sad that I would never see him as an old man. I'd never see him get dementia and not know who I was anymore. All those wonderful experiences that I'm not going to have now.
You're weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
That's a weird thing to say.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
But very, such an accurate portrayal of grief. That the thing that upset you was something really weird.
Because that's the thing you do. You miss all the good stuff, but you miss the bad stuff as well sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's odd that you're longing for the bad stuff, certainly.
I'm not denying that it was odd. It felt odd at the time.
Many people don't get dementia and they just die when they're an old person. So, you know, you could have longed for that, but no.
Yeah, I'm not saying that had he then died of old age without getting dementia, I don't think Benno would have felt like, get dementia already.
The same emotional reaction.
I really wanted to be harrowed by your experiences.
It would have made me more interesting.
But that's the other thing that's interesting about films and TV shows is sometimes that grief hits you sideways, and it's not like, oh, you see a dad die on screen and that makes you
Absolutely.
Sad. Sometimes something else will happen that has almost nothing to do with it, and it will remind you of something, and that will trigger it. Because grief doesn't make any sense.
Listen, if there's one catchphrase we should have for this show, rather than bottle it up and death comes for us all, it's grief doesn't make any sense. It is non-linear. Yeah. It's stupid. The five stages of grief are barely have much of a foothold in reality, but at least attempt to do something to describe something which is stupid.
Yeah.
I entirely agree. My God. But I don't know to what extent I should let you get away with talking about this film, because to me, and I haven't seen it, so maybe casting judgment is wrong. Obviously. Okay, but here's what I think. When you tell me, well, it's a slightly high concept film starring two sort of, if you were trying to list sort of the best male and female actors we've got, you sort of might put them in for it.
Yeah.
So sort of the two best talent we can get, really, pure acting, who have a history at the Oscars. I can't help but just think it sort of sounds like the old Modern Family team in the boardroom just writing on a whiteboard, right, what'll make him cry? What can we do? What's going to win the Oscar, guys? What's going to win the Oscar? And, you know, I that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And it also, it doesn't fit the bill of what we're going to discuss in this episode, which is good examples of dads dying on screen, because as I've said, while it's a good example, it's not a good example of that in any way.
No, I think it's good examples of things that give you a grief response, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. And it definitely did.
I'm trying to explain my childhood trauma and you're trying to justify crying in front of a sink.
Yeah. Good place to cry, though. If you are going to cry, do it into a sink or a bath or a vase.
Mix it in, doesn't it? Mix it into the washing up. Does the salt add a sort of a scoury quality, do you think, to the water?
Yeah, quite possibly. What I like to do is, if I'm cooking pasta, I'll just cry a little bit into the water, because the salt really helps.
Yeah. Okay, well, these are good examples, and that's great. But I want to talk about the bad examples. As you know, I'm a big nerd. A big nerd boy.
Yes, confirmed.
Board games to the left of me.
Pokemon to the right. Here I am doing a podcast with you.
There's so much to my right that's nerdy, I didn't know which thing to pick. The games controller, the Pocky, the Pokemon, and news on television in the background. Yes, I'm a big nerd. And one of my nerd origin stories, really, is Harry Potter. Because as a kid, you know, I got super into it, had all the books, reading them as they were published. Our generation sort of had that experience. I think even the next generation still have a big experience reading them. And maybe this is controversial, and maybe it's just because I'm quite familiar with it or I view it differently now. But I think the parental death in Harry Potter is not just gratuitous. I think it might actually be really bad.
Wow, this is a bold take. So, first question, yeah. As in Harry's parents.
Well, that's one example, but I think mm-hmm. that as an origin story, that's okay to say because it sets up him having a tough thing to get past and the sort of real world versus fictional world, which is quite nice. I like that. I think that's okay. And, you know, in the films, the Dursleys are all portrayed so brilliantly. It's so funny. You know, you couldn't possibly take umbrage with it, really. But as the films go on, Harry constantly accrues father figures. You know, Hagrid becomes right. a father figure to Harry. Dumbledore becomes a father figure to Harry. Snape becomes a father figure to Harry. Sirius becomes a father figure to Harry. And, I mean, spoiler alert for something that was published 20 years ago now, but all bar Hagrid, they all get knocked off.
Every
book has to end with a different father figure to Harry dying.
That's a good point.
It's so gratuitous. I mean, it's just such a needless tearjerker. It's like, if you actually start analysing it, by the time we get to the final book, it's like, well, of course, Snape's in for it now, because they spent so much time talking about how, actually, Harry is a good guy, and, oh, actually, he really cared about his mother. Oh, and actually, he was like, of course, Dumbledore's about to die, because they've just spent all this time building up how close they are. Yeah, I mean, it's actually really gratuitous that they have to keep going over this trauma over and over again. Reliving Harry's parents dying through the eyes of a different person. I just think that's really rubbish. I mean, it's just bad writing, isn't it?
Just repeating the same trick over and over again.
It's the same gimmick to get an emotional response at the end of the book. I mean, you know, there's so many characters that could die, so why does it have to be the father figure? It doesn't actually make any sense other than just being, I guess, easy.
Well, I guess the message of the story is, like, it's really driving home. Your dad will die, and you can replace him with another one. He'll die as well.
But this is
everyone that you look up to will eventually die.
This is my thing. Harry has a relationship with both of his parents before he dies. You know, he's a baby, mm-hmm. and his mother died to save him. And they make this point, you have your mother's eyes, and they refer to his parents throughout. He doesn't take on mother figures. He doesn't take on mother figures throughout the books. Maybe you might say Mrs. Weasley a bit, but that's so root one, you know, the mum of his friend. That's
And it's more like she takes him on, if anything.
Yeah. That's for me, I don't put much stock in that, you know. Certainly not in the same way as these other characters do. The Sirius, the Dumbledore, the Snapes of the world. You know, they all have a really serious father-son bond going on that's developed throughout the books.
Mm-hmm.
So why fathers? Why does it have to be dead dads? And I think it's just because it's easy. I think it's just because kid loses dad figure, boy loses dad figure, brilliant, tick, that'll make him cry, done.
Yeah.
How am I going to figure that one out? Doesn't matter. He's
so you think he's quite lazy?
You know, he fell through the shroud of Quashimandah, and now he's in the other realm of reality where one cannot speak to the flippity-pop. sorry, I love Harry Potter, I don't know why I'm doing that. But
the thing that I do like about the dead dad in Harry Potter is that, like, so Harry's a baby when his dad dies,
full-blown baby,
and he always looks up to his dad, and he thinks a lot about, like, oh, I wish my dad was back, and all of that stuff. There's quite a lot. It's more eloquent than that. He's not just in the corridors of Hogwarts going, God, I wish my dad was back.
I mean,
but there's all these kind of things. It is essentially that.
Essentially that.
But also, throughout the series, you get more and more of an impression that through everyone else's eyes, Harry's dad's a bit of a twat.
Yes.
You get a lot of examples of, he was a bit of a bully and he was quite arrogant. And there's lots of people who don't like him. And yeah, generally the people who don't like him are the bad guys. But there's still a sense of, like, he was, you know, a bit of a difficult character. And that's one of the things that I think you rarely get, is that dead dads in film, the lazy way of doing it, is the dad died, he was perfect, he's dead now, and now you have to try and fill his shoes. Whereas actually you get a bit of that kind of tarnished legacy with old Harry Potter.
James Potter. But I think
James Potter.
That sort of delivered, yeah, they set it up throughout and then delivered that as almost a twist at the end of the final book. Actually, he was a dick.
What? The twist is your dad's a cunt.
It's a twist. But that's because, you know, the real dad is, of course, the dads we made along the way. Who have themselves since died, but at least they were nice. For me, as a big nerd to say that, maybe I'll lose my nerd cred, but I do think, actually, revisiting it and rereading it, which I am doing at the moment, it's so glaring to me how shoehorned in some of these dad relationships are, and actually how they don't necessarily work. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
So would you have preferred it if, throughout the series, Harry was collecting mother figures?
Well, why doesn't he?
And, in fact, it was all the... or the women who were getting killed throughout the series.
They don't need to die. I mean, you can kill off characters. It's just interesting. Why don't they? Why doesn't he? Why don't they? You know, why doesn't he get McGonagall? Why doesn't she take on more than
traditionally? Traditionally, there's sort of, it's a gendered thing that, you know, a young man loses his male role model and then has to learn how to become a man for himself. A young woman loses her female role model, has to work out how to become a woman herself. J.K. Rowling, fairly strict when it comes to certain gender identities. Can we keep that in? Or?
Pretty funny.
I wanted to find a bad example as well. I think there's a lot of bad examples, and I think over the series we can get into more and more of them, and more good examples. And this one isn't specifically parental death, but grief itself. And I've written notes because I've got a lot to say.
Oh.
Have you ever watched the Netflix series Afterlife, made by and starring Ricky Gervais?
I have done, yes.
How much of it have you watched?
Not a huge amount. I tried to watch it at the start. My dad loved Ricky Gervais, really loved him. Either he did watch Afterlife and liked it, because I just loved him. So, you know, and I used to be a massive Ricky Gervais fan as well, but I found the first series hard to watch for a few reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it necessarily earned its emotional weight, so I think I just stopped watching after the first series.
Fair. I agree. I watched two series, despite hating every second of it. It's weird. So what happens in Afterlife is Ricky Gervais's character Tony, who is essentially Ricky Gervais.
Yes.
His wife Lisa, played by Kerry Godleman, who is brilliant. She dies before the series starts, and his reaction to that, the sort of premise, is he decides that his grief is his superpower, and he's going to do and say whatever he wants all the time, and then kill himself. And that's the premise. But throughout the series, he learns that actually the best thing to do is to be kind to people, and he decides not to kill himself. I think essentially Afterlife is a 3-series-long grief fantasy where Ricky Gervais imagines what would happen if his wife died in real life. And what he takes from that is that he gets to become the main character of existence. And so he sets it up in a way where his is the only nuanced character in the entire thing. The other characters exist to say things that set up Ricky Gervais to talk about his loss. Sometimes they don't even set it up very strongly. Sometimes they say things like, how are you? And he says, well, my wife's dead. And the thing about when your wife dies is it's really sad and you're a twat. Because there's quite a lot of that as well. It's got these weird scenes where it will be like really sort of incredibly sentimental, mawkish, like, he'll recite a quote that if you Googled quotes about grief, you would find, and he'll recite it to a character who exists purely to hear Ricky Gervais talk about his dead wife. And then it'll cut to a scene of him calling, like in I think the first episode, he walks past a playground and calls a child a fat ginger cunt. Which, what audience is this for who want both of those two things? Yeah. There's two completely different shows in there. But my problem with it is that it's what you imagine grief to be before you've ever experienced grief, where you do feel like, and it's, I think it's what you would want grief to be, where when you're grieving, you are the only person that matters. Nobody else is important. Nobody else has any agency, feelings. No one's dealing with their own shit. It's just about you for as long as you want it to be, and the whole world stops because you've lost somebody. And that isn't how grief works, as we all know. And then all the other characters are just there to set up Ricky Gervais, and then to tell him, you're such a great guy, Ricky, even though at no point in the series does he really do anything nice for anyone. He's just objectively sort of quite unpleasant, grumpy, and just outwardly aggressive to almost everyone. And all the people say to him, you're just such a great guy. You've got such a kind soul, Tony. All the way through. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's nonsense. And also, he kills a homeless person in season one. Do you remember that bit?
Yes. Yeah.
He decides that suicide is what he wants to do now. And so he finds a homeless man who's a drug addict, buys him enough drugs so that man can kill himself. He then kills himself, and you see him getting his body being taken away. Ricky Gervais then, throughout the series, realises that actually it would be a waste for him to kill himself. And at no point in the succeeding three seasons does he ever think back on that man who he helped commit suicide and reflect on that. He just goes around with everyone telling him he's a brilliant person. It's so fucked up.
Oh, my God.
It's absolutely another problem with it. You're a journalist, Tom. Yeah. If you were a journalist who worked for a small local paper, yeah, and your job was purely to write small, like, human interest stories... how big a house in Hampstead Heath do you think you could buy?
I don't necessarily know if you'd be in the Heath. I think you're describing a salary of £19,000 a year, or 21,000 for the Americans listening.
And he lives in an absolutely incredible, like, mansion, which I assume is just Ricky Gervais's house that he didn't want to leave to do filming. And he works at this, it's called the Tambury Gazette. One person's job there is to take photos of the people that Ricky Gervais talked to on, like, a digital camera from 2010. And it's a full-time job. It's absolutely insane.
I think my reading of that situation would be Ricky Gervais is quite an old person now. So that house wouldn't have cost so much 40 years ago.
Yes.
And certainly wouldn't have cost so much, 80 years ago when his dad bought it and gave it to him in his will. So.
It could be that. It could be.
Put it in his inheritance tax 7 years. Had signed it over to him 7 years before he died, and therefore it was exempt from inheritance tax.
Well, that must be the explanation. I wish they'd gone into that kind of detail.
Yeah, just to explain. I don't necessarily mind that. Well, they should have done what they did in Harry Potter, where they just went, Harry's a multi-billionaire.
Oh, yeah, that was
good.
Don't
worry about it. How's he going to afford all the stuff that would make the Wizarding World magic? Does he have to struggle? He's a multi-billionaire. He is more gold than anyone, to the extent that at the end of the fourth or the fifth book, she actually has him just give all of his money to the brothers to sort of just get rid of it, to get rid of that benefit, because it was starting to make
pesky
money. The book stopped making sense in a way, because it was like, he could really buy his way out of this problem. There's a lot of issues which greasing someone's hand would resolve.
I'm just saying.
This man is richer than Lucius Malfoy. I don't want to get back onto my thing, but, I'm just saying, it is weird that it's like...
Too late now.
Well, we're doing a children's book, so, the young male character had better be rich, because otherwise how could we have a children's book if the character isn't...
But the thing is, Harry Potter is meant to be like an escapist fantasy.
Yes.
For children. I don't know why Ricky Gervais's show Afterlife, that he thinks of as quite a gritty, like, drama comedy, yeah. why that's allowed to be an escapist fantasy for, I guess, men in their 50s who wish their wife was dead. It's a really bizarre. And it's also, Harry Potter has a more nuanced take on grief than Afterlife does, yeah. because as we said, like, Harry Potter's dad is made out to be, you know, he's not a hero. There's all kinds of problems with him. Throughout Afterlife, it's just Ricky Gervais watching an unbelievable amount of home videos of his dead wife and yeah. telling everyone about how brilliant she is, how perfect she was. What a wonder. And nobody ever goes, you know, I think maybe you put her on a pedestal and she's, you know, maybe other people are also fine. They're just like, yeah, well, she was an absolute angel, but you know what, Ricky? So are you. I know you killed that homeless man, but you're still a great guy.
This is a classic example of media grief. This is a classic stone-cold example of media grief. Somebody watching home videos of the person who's died.
Yeah.
I don't know a single living person in real life who has sat around watching home videos of someone who's died. I don't know a single person. I know a lot of people with dead people in their life, and yet they don't do that. I certainly don't do that. My dad used to be an amateur dramatics, so there's actually countless videos, footage of him performing, doing something he loved. Mm. So that's accessible to me and incredibly easily accessible as well, and yet is so far away from something I would want to do. You see it in...
Why don't you want to watch them?
Why would I?
Because you get to see your dad. I think that one... I don't think anyone necessarily wants to watch home videos to the extent that people do in films. But
in a film, it's like Sixth Sense, and she sat there and she's watching the wedding video of herself and Bruce Willis. And it's like...
Yeah.
But he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who does that? Who's like, oh, my husband's died, I better watch our wedding video, that'll cheer me up.
I think quite a lot of people.
I don't think so. No, your memory. What's like memories is the memories in your head.
It's memories.
Memories,
yeah,
is like
sure.
memories.
But that's like saying, you know, why would anyone want to look at pictures of a person who's dead? What you're sort of suggesting is that if somebody's dead, no, you should you should never look at anything they've done again.
Not like that. If a picture comes up on Facebook, or if you're on your phone and there's a picture in there, or, you know, I don't think people necessarily set out to look at some picture of somebody died, unless there was a circumstance surrounding that, like their Facebook account got deleted or became inaccessible, and, you know, it became difficult to access that again, and then they did, and then they were able to. Unless it was a circumstance like that, where they discovered a windfall of content related to that person, then yes, I do think that. But I don't think people sit down and go, well, it's time to watch some videos and look at some pictures of a dead person. It's dead person media time.
I disagree.
Do you?
I do sometimes watch videos of my dad, yeah. Sometimes just to feel, because, you know...
Sometimes just to feel.
Sometimes just to feel anything. But what I would say is that I would prefer it if, in films and in TV shows, it was a more accurate depiction of that thing that I do think does happen. Because it is always the wedding video, or, like in Afterlife, it's some incredibly poignant moment, and it's filmed in 4K. I mean, he was filming all the time with some of the highest quality equipment. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes from multiple different camera angles, he was filming these home videos of his wife. I would much prefer it if it was like the way that I sometimes watch videos of my dad, which is I've got access to two videos of my dad through my phone. Mm. One is a video of him failing to take a photo of a grasshopper on holiday. And there's a grasshopper a praying mantis on a towel, and he's trying to take a photo of it and keeps getting
it's quite
wrong.
Funny.
And we're all sat around. And then the second video is him doing the ice bucket challenge.
Oh, yes.
And so they're the videos that you have access to. It's not some like poignant moment of your dad like just happening to tell you that he loves you. It's like, here's my dad throwing a bucket of ice over his head, topless in the garden.
Well, we're entering the generation who will have that. that content. You know, I record the videos of these. We put them up in clips online. You know, our progeny will ultimately be able to, and I consider it will be it to be our progeny. You know, you and me, their children.
We're adopting
children
a boy together.
The podcast. They'll be able to watch these videos back and just see you know adults nowadays in all sorts of angles from their Facebook. So it is, you know, maybe they will be able to watch the podcast.
Well, I mean, they'll have too much content though. Even if I died and I had a son, I'd be astonished if in a few years he's going to watch multiple hours of me doing new material in a pub in London or an hour-long podcast record with you.
He gets to watch you die every night on the... Oh, no, that's not classic. Indeed. Look, there's one last one.
There'll be far too much.
There's one last one I wanted to touch on this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's a very quick thing. But I was watching a show called White Collar, which is maybe my favourite show. Really fun, kind of con man. It's a bit like Catch Me If You Can after he's caught him.
Right.
And it's that for a whole show, you know?
Okay.
It's fun. It's good. There's an actor in it called Willie Garson who also played a character on Sex and the City. Kind of a short, bald guy with glasses. He plays a character called Mozzie on White Collar. He's funny.
Him.
He's great. He's really entertaining. And his character, it's revealed very early on, is an orphan. And they do a couple of storylines relating to that. They have a storyline where he goes back to the orphanage and there's moments like that in the show. And Willie Garson died a couple of years ago. And I discovered that his son was himself adopted.
Oh,
so
wow.
The actor had adopted his son and was kind of, I guess, baking that lived experience into the character. And they did all these storylines related to orphans, which obviously must have been, I guess, at least inspired or maybe taking from that real lived experience. And I just thought that was such a really nice, cool thing, you know?
Yeah.
So,
what a lovely story.
That's now the person I want to get on this podcast. It's Willie Garson's son, if you're listening.
Amazing.
You're the guest I want. Not Jürgen Klopp anymore. Not Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Although Jürgen, if you're listening, we will have
We'll have you, Jürgen. Don't get me wrong. You stop! Never! Skim an Erdinger. That was brilliant.
You sent me an audio clip of you doing that impression with no context whatsoever the other day. And it was on, I'd say, one of the most stressful days of my life. I remember listening to it and being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I'm glad. Well, that was a banger.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
It was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun one to do. And the thing is, the thing that's frustrating about it is there are so many examples out there that it's almost, you're sport for choice. There's so many to think of that you can't think of them all, which is why we're going to do this episode probably every series if we keep getting good examples.
Yeah, we're going to keep coming back to it. Every time we see one now in the wild, we're writing it down, you know. It's going to be good grief as well. I was watching The Good Place. I'm sort of rewatching that. If you've seen that one, Rich, it's obviously a show quite baked into death. But I always feel like it does it really nicely. You know, it sort of makes a good point of like the silly ways people die, but then also the sort of emotion around it. It's a really lovely show. Really lovely show.
Yeah. I always like it when anything's sort of a bit tangled when it comes to grief.
That's good. Good.
The
movie.
Worst thing is there grief entangled?
Dead parents, of course. She's living with her evil aunt or similar.
Evil grandma. Dead parents in that one as well.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Always probably got dead parents as well. There's always dead parents. It's Disney.
Why are they
Disney.
Always leaving? They always leave their parents, their kids, to the evil member of the family.
I think.
Surely you've got a good sister, maybe. Leave them to the good sister.
The evil member of the family tends to be slightly responsible for their death, I feel. No, one thing I wanted to talk about in this little outro is if you're a podcast listener and not a social media follower, then we've got a bit of a treat for you on the social media. If you head to our Instagram page, you'll find that we're starting to upload little videos about death.
What a treat.
What a treat. I think the feedback I've been getting from people listening, and if you don't agree with this, then message me and tell me I'm wrong. But the feedback I've been getting from people is they really liked it when we spoke to Victor, the deaf daddy, the mortician.
Yes.
And our listeners love death. So if you're one of those who loves death, pop on the Instagram at Our Dad's Died, and you'll see we're starting to pop up little videos. The one I've just done is about the Peter Pan statue in London and the story behind that, which is quite interesting. It's about how Peter Pan's a metaphor for death. I don't want to spoil it, you know, you give it a watch yourself. It's only a minute long. But if you like it, please do like and share that, because I think the more people that watch those, the more people will end up listening to this podcast. And you know, that would be lovely, because we'd love to only have to do this and not have to work our jobs. You know what I mean? It's,
oh, we'd love that so much.
It's so nice to just not have to go to work. Can you imagine going to work every day?
Yeah, and then people would be like, how come you haven't got a job? And you're like, well, my dad said.
Yeah.
Long story short,
I don't need it.
Don't need a job when you got a dead dad, do you? Might as well get something out of it.
Wouldn't it? If they went, yeah, all right. You know what? You 6 months.
If the government brought in a rule that, like, if one of your parents died, you just didn't have to go to work anymore.
Yeah, for 6 months. They went, yeah, you can have 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, see, that would be nice. Whereas now, I think statutory bereavement, you get 3 days.
Yeah, it's crazy. The BBC was really kind to me and let me have longer. But even then, I felt I wanted to come back to work, even though I probably should have. I probably needed. I needed so much longer, but I felt I wanted to come back. You know, but I could have used someone being like, "No, you know, you're forced to take 6 months off. You've no choice.
We won't let you back in the building.
Yeah. You're barred, mate. You're 6 months off.
Security have been told to attack if they see you anywhere nearby.
Yeah, it's crazy, I know, but we've armed them. That's the weird thing.
The main point is, if you don't follow us on Instagram, do, please. Yeah. And we'll be putting up some more and more content up there for you. You can follow us on Twitter as well, but as I've made clear, that is an absolute graveyard of a place. Yeah. So there is no point going on there unless you want to see fights between Millwall and Feyenoord fans and videos of car accidents.
Indeed. And
the worst people in the world saying the worst things in the world.
Yeah, again, I feel you often veer into territory where you know I can't stand by when you start saying these things. You know that.
You can, for balance, you can disagree and say that you think Elon Musk and Twitter are both brilliant.
Well, why don't you do that for balance? Why don't you, for balance, talk all good stuff on Twitter and then we're fine?
All right, I think Elon Musk is absolutely perfect, and I think that he's made Twitter so much better.
Call him Daddy Elon, please.
I think Daddy Elon is... I wish that he was my dad.
Yeah.
And then I wish that he would die so that I would inherit £258 billion.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. I think people don't know what you think anymore, so I think we're on square ground. As people know, I don't have any opinions about anything anymore. Much like my emotions. No emotions, no opinions. I've got nothing left. But what I do think, and this is the only thing I think, is that if you think it's funny listening to us talk, you should see us talk as well, because that's pretty funny. If you pop on the social media channels that we've just mentioned, you can see us. Little clips get put up there. And hopefully that'll make you smile.
Yeah. This is far more than enough for an outro.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you so much for listening.
Hopefully this is already faded out some time ago. This is all in,
and it's all for you, the listener, who love us chatting nonsense at the end. You can stop whenever you like. But eventually, you'll be made to stop. And that's because, Rich, death comes for us all.
It does, but it comes for you first.
One. See you later.
See you next week.
Bye.